Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Road to Cheltenham. Sorry if everything looks rather different at the moment. I've got one of those bulbs that simulates daylight, and it's looking remarkably different, I think. So maybe if you're wondering why it looks like it's the middle of the day here, it's because of the bulb.
If you wonder why mine's yellow, it's because I must have a yellow light bulb.
That'll probably be it. I'm mesmerised, but I feel like I'm going towards the light. Let's go towards...
It's daytime. I kind of a light bulb is that. They haven't come to Ireland yet, those ones.
Well, I'm not sure. The jury's out for me, and I'm staring at it a bit too much, which means that, you know, I could end up, you know, brushing myself against it like some moth. Right, let's focus, shall I? I'm going to focus. Let's talk about the Clarence House. You and I have both got to eat large amounts of humble pie, have we not? Because we dismissed First Flow, I think, in just a sentence last week for the Clarence House.
Well, at least you gave him a mention. I just dismissed him full stop. You did bring him up when we were doing the homework. I didn't even highlight him. So, yeah, I think I have to eat more than you. But he most certainly showed us what he was capable of in Ascot. And I think showed everybody else as well. Brave ride from David Bass, some great jumping. Politolog set out and made it to go a really good gallop at Harry Cobden. But, you know, First Flow took him on all the way down to Swindley Bottom. And they had poached a big lead when they turned with a mile to race. And I think the other horses just had too much ground to make up, and the ones in front kept jumping and kept galloping. And to be fair to First Flow, if anything, he extended his advantage all the way down the straight.
Yeah, it was a really dominant performance. He's got to be considered a leading chance for the Queen Mother Champion Chase now, has he not?
But sure, he beat what you would have considered to be the best horses in the UK. Well, exception of Altior, obviously, we'd see him in the Game Spirit, but Politolog, waiting patiently, Deffy Desai and Fanny and Destreval. I thought the one that might improve most was Fanny and Destreval. I thought his first run at 2 miles, he just jumped a bit slow for that kind of race at that tempo, and his jumping never allowed him to make any ground. Yeah. Deffy was definitely disappointing, and Politolog, look, Paul Nicholls thought he was beaten by a better horse on the day, and that's the way it appeared.
I wondered about Politolog. Obviously, there was a change of jockey, but Harry Cobden is very familiar with the horse. But once they went out on the second circuit, his jumping just didn't seem as fluent as it can be. And that seemed to me to be the spur for David Bass to decide that he wanted to take Politolog on with First Flow.
Yeah, it was. Politolog was a bit out in the track and always left room for First Flow down his inside. Maybe that was a ground decision from Harry Cobden's point of view, but... No, Politolog, maybe he didn't, but it was the first time in a while, Lydia, it was served up to him early in the race. He got it his own way in the Champion Chase, he got it his own way a bit in the Tingle Creek. Now, albeit the Tingle Creek, he was going a really good gallop, so that's why he was getting it his own way. But, no, David Bass definitely wanted to serve it up to him, and he kept into him all the way and had Politolog out of his comfort zone a long way from home.
I don't want to take anything away from First Flow at all, but just to finish Politolog off, I do wonder, his two of his career best performances prior to this run had been his last two starts, and there were quite a large gap before that race. Paul Nicholls had talked about that being one of the elements that he had introduced to Politolog's campaign in order to get the best out of him. Now, I appreciate that 7 weeks between the Tingle Creek and the Clarence House should be enough for most horses, but is it possible in the case of this particular horse that he wasn't quite at his best for a reason like that?
Possibly, but I think that's about all he has between now and the Champion Chase as well. So... it's not going to be any different there. But if you're walking on a rule of thumb, Lydia, on heavy ground, 3-4 weeks in the winter should be enough time for most horses. So then if you're given one that's a bit delicate, an extra 3 weeks, it would seem like plenty. That's only as a rule of thumb. And initially, maybe Politolog does require more.
And how about, what did you think of waiting patiently? Do you feel this trip is just a bit too short for him these days?
It probably always was, and it definitely looked like it the other day. He didn't stop galloping, he didn't stop trying. He just didn't have the early pace to keep closer to First Flow and Politolog. He was going as fast as he was able down to Swindley Bottom, and especially in Ascot, where when you turn with 7 furlongs to run, you can't make up ground till you get up to almost the fourth last fence, and you've only 4.5 furlongs to run then to try and cut down the deficit. So it's not a track that you can get too far back on, over jumps especially, because you can't make ground up the hill. And he just didn't have the pace to keep up with them all the way down the hill.
And if you were Ruth Jefferson, where would you be going with him next, do you think?
I think Ryanair, or if you wanted to skip that and go to Aintree for the Melling Chase, I think either or maybe even go to the 3 mile in Aintree. But I'd probably chance him in the Ryanair if he was mine. But look, each to their own. And especially now that he's had to able to back up two runs, running to King George and back it up in the Clarence House. If he was fitting well, I'd definitely be giving him his day at the Cheltenham Festival.
And how should we regard Defi Desoi?
But a big question mark. How about time form put beside him? Two ticks or a question mark? Or I don't understand time form language, but you definitely had to put something beside him.
I think it might be a question mark. There's just that one standout performance in the Tingle Creek. I know he won the Clarence House last season as well, and that was a good performance. But in terms of it being, you know, a sort of one, you know, 170 type performance on racing post ratings, at least, it's only the Tingle Creek that one year that stands out there.
Yeah, but to me, he hasn't finished out his last couple of races, and he didn't finish out again on Saturday. I don't mind him being outpaced and staying on. You can say, well, we can go up and trip or something like that. But the fact that he closed and then faded, it's the fading part that would worry me.
One last thing then about First Flow. Must go to the Champion Chase. Both Kim Bailey and David Bass have talked about how the horse doesn't really have much respect for obstacles, and they have to stall him over tyres because otherwise he tends to demolish fences along the way. Just going back to his 2018 run behind Somerville Boy in the Supreme Novices Hurdle, where he ultimately pulled up and David Bass reported that he was hanging right and going to his right throughout. That's the doubt that he brings to the Cheltenham table, isn't it?
Of course it is. But it's his only try there. It's hard to tell if he was jumping right in Ascot. He didn't appear to be, but look, he's definitely going to have his go and see how he gets on. And look, I suppose in a Champion Chase, going fast enough, it'll be long and longer for him the way David Bass rides him, and he doesn't give him much opportunity to get in tight to show no regard. And I assume that's the way he'll ride him in a Champion Chase. He'll just keep attacking on him, and I hope he keeps answering.
And that matches up with Chaka Poussoir as well. It's going to be some race, this, isn't it?
It could be, but this time last year we thought we'd have that race too, and we didn't get it. So fingers crossed, hopefully we'll get it. And it would just be wonderful if Altior won the game spirit and you had three.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Right, there was another horse that announced himself more definitely on the stage and potentially for the Magnus Gold Cup, and that was Royal Pagai. We've talked about him a few times during the course of this series, and we talked about his jumping quite a bit, but he put up a superb performance, didn't he, at Haydock on Saturday, a winning from a mark of 1.56 by 7 lengths from Potter's Legend.
Yeah, and look, from the time they jumped off, you see Tom Scudamore riding him for the first time, lined him up last, and you know he was going to take his time on him. But by the time they jumped the first fence, he's a bit closer. By the time he gets to the bottom of the backstride the first time, he just can't help it, but he's nearly upsides in front. He just looked like a horse that was in the wrong race from the word go. He looked one division, everything else looked to be in a different division, and he just travelled so easily, jumped really efficiently. And there was only ever likely to be one result. It resembled more watching a beginner's chase than it did a Peter Marsh or a competitive handicap chase. You'd love the way he jumped the second last, shortened up a bit to his left. Now, he's a bit left all the way at the last, but he's won as he liked. Now, does that mean, I don't know what that means. Is he, to look at it, will 10 pounds, if that race was on again next week and he's running off 166, would you back any of the opposition to beat him? Most definitely not. So, what way does that penalty work? You're supposed to try and balance the race up. Does that mean you drop everything else? You take him as a 166 horse? I don't know. I wouldn't like to be the English handicapper trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I think he was a bit freaky. He's dropped the second by £2, the third by £4. But, you know, the second beat the third by 7 lengths. So, it could be one of those races at Haydock in the ground as well. But
I think you keep saying that. Everyone says, oh, Haydock in the ground. I think the whole lot of them need to come down and down. Handicapping has to work both ways. You can't keep going up. They have to come down. You have a veteran series created in England because you couldn't bring the horses down low enough to make them competitive.
And this was a party political broadcast on behalf of the Irish handicapping system. To come back to Royal Pagai, do you think his jumping has improved? Because we talked about how he jumped at Kempton and he was on occasion quite disrespectful, low slung at his obstacles.
Yeah, look, and we'll pick him up in Kempton, you'll see him the third fence and he hits it a proper dunt or a dig or a nudge, whatever you want to call it. But he was better after that. And look, by the time he gets around to the last fence, he has a look at it. He wasn't quick, but he had a look and got up high enough. Now, as you said, Lydia, he is French and was an ex-French chaser, and his way of jumping, I think it's best illustrated if you look at him beside Creve Hill, who jumped really well in Haydock last week. So we picked him up at the last in the back straight. Royal Pagai is on the outside in the left. Creve Hill is right beside him. And if you look at the front, just their front end, look at the height Creve Hill's shoulders, knees and feet are above the fence compared to Royal Pagai's. He barely skims the top. Into the home straight, the first in the home straight. Watch again. Like, the difference is the height and elevation, whereas Royal Pagai is barely over the top of it. Creve Hill is clear of it. The second last and the last on the circuit to go. Just the gap, the air that Creve Hill creates that Royal Pagai doesn't. And that was that's where Creve Hill jumping really well, who is a very good jumper. It's just two different styles. The French horses are always over the top, whereas horses who are English or Irish tend to be a little higher. Not every horse, but they tend to be a little higher. And if you even look at them over the last two fences, and Creve Hill is gone, and if you look for the third horse, just your type, who's out on his feet at the last, in the back of the shot, still watch the elevation he gives the last compared to Royal Pagai. He just measures the top, but the mistake in Kempton, to me, has made him have a little bit more respect for an English fence compared to a French fence. And obviously he has realised now that these aren't as soft as French fences, and he's given them a little bit more elevation. Not much, but a little bit more.
Okay, so it's a flat track at Kempton, it's a flat track at Haydock. It very much is not that at Cheltenham. And I tend to associate that really efficient low style of jumping with being particularly effective on a flat track and sometimes being caught out on an undulating track with downhill fences like Cheltenham. What do you think?
Well, where the undulation catches you, if you're low in front and the fence stops your momentum at all, it gets you higher behind. And if you get high behind with downhill jumps, gravity takes over. So that is your only worry, that they have to stay, if they're going to be low in front, they have to stay as low behind.
Would you, if you were Venetia Williams and Rich Ritchie, go for the Gold Cup here? This is a horse that is essentially a novice. He could run in novice company, could run in the National Hunt Chase. Obviously, Rich Ritchie has got Monkfish for the RSA. But that was his 11th chase start. He's actually got more experience over fences, admittedly, most of it in France, than Santini or Minella Indo or Champ.
Yeah, I know. But I would just, me being the professional, a former professional, I'm no longer one, I would be looking for results, and I would run in the race that I thought I would win, not that I had a chance of winning. That would be the National Hunt Chase. And that would only be my personal view, and it probably goes against what most other people want to hear, but that was the way I would have thought, and I won't change my mind now.
You're telling me that if Royal Pagai and Monkfish are in the same stable, that you'd be arguing that Royal Pagai should go and run in the amateurs race and not the Gold Cup?
Well, I argued Back in Focus and Rat Vinden should run in the National Hunt Chase, and they both won it.
Okay, all right, fair enough. You are, there's that much integrity, well done.
I don't know, to me, that's part of being on any team. You try and help sort out where the horses are going to go. And to me, that's where he will be going.
No, you're right, I'm being silly. You're absolutely right. It is a team and you've got to select the best race that the horse has got the best chance. And clearly he would have the best chance, I think, in the National Hunt Chase. But I can see why. I think that level of performance, it's not an unreasonable thing for the horse to line up in the Gold Cup, and he does have some chasing experience.
As I said in the very beginning, the race you would win or have a chance of winning, and he would have to have a chance in the Gold Cup.
Right. We had another interesting race at Haydock on Saturday, and that was the new one, Unibet Hurdle. It featured the return of the dual champion hurdle winner, Bouvardaire, up against Ballyandy and Navajo Pass.
Yeah, the one everyone forgot. The outsider of three. How do we miss it? But now... Pass. And this was interesting. Sean Quinlan booked out the gate. Nicola Bonville did what I thought he would do. He sat in behind, waiting to ride Bouvardaire for speed. But Navajo Pass is jumping over the first three hurdles compared to Bouvardaire's was chalk and cheese. Bouvardaire just looked rusty. He was a bit high and twisty at the first couple of jumps, whereas Navajo Pass just bang at the first one, second one, third one. He never missed a beat over the three of them. And by the time we got to the winning post, the horse that's struggling is Ballyandy. Navajo Pass has him out of his comfort zone. And Sean Quinlan steadied it round the bend, pinged all the hurdles down the back straight. And they get back another breeder on the home turn, and he kicks off the home off the bend. Down to two out, Bouvardaire is closing them down. But Bouvardaire, in the course of the race, his jumping has sharpened up. It's come back to him. He's much slicker. Navajo Pass misses the last. Bouvardaire pings it. But fitness tells then. And I was thinking about it afterwards. If you had a footballer or a rugby player that was off for 400 odd days and they came back and for 80 minutes of a match played like Bouvardaire ran, but got tired in the last few minutes, you'd say, that was great. And I think if you look at Bouvard there, that's probably the way to look at it. Because for my money, for 85% of this race, he looked like the one you wanted to be on. He just didn't get home fitness-wise. So I wouldn't overlook it.
No, neither would I. If anything, I thought that this very much increases his chances of getting to Cheltenham, which I thought was no slam dunk up until I actually saw him in action at Haydock. He doubled in price, I think, in the non-runner no-bet market to 20-1. I don't see that at all, as you say. I think it was... obviously, work needs to be done. And I think, do you think that Ballyandy running so lethargically, that kind of contributed to Bouvardeur getting a bit too far back? Because Nico was also thinking about, as you just said, this is a horse that hasn't raced for so long.
Yeah, and you're any jockey lines up at the start, they should be aware of the opposition, what the opposition is going to do, and what's your biggest threat. And on paper, there is nobody that would tell you very well, very few people, probably would tell you now with hindsight, that Navajo Pass was a bigger danger than Ballyandy. But when Nico de Bomba left the parade ring, Ballyandy was the biggest danger, and that was the horse he elected to follow. Now, it ended up being the wrong one, but you can only set out with the best intentions, and that's what he did. And I think you can mark it up for that reason as well.
Donald McCain hasn't entered Navajo Pass in the Champion Hurdle. The horse was fourth in the Triumph last year, and he was talking about something like the Aintree Hurdle over 2.5 miles, as the horse stays that far and has form on flat tracks. Would you not be tempted to go for the county? He's 1.56. Arctic Fire won the county off 1.58. Now, I know that Arctic Fire, a couple of seasons earlier, hadn't it finished second in the Champion Hurdle, but nonetheless.
In third and one as well, and he's coming back from an injury, but he'd come down in the handicap to 1.56 Arctic Fire, because that's an all-time high for Navajo Pass. So can you win a big handicap off an all-time high mark, or are you more likely to win it when you're coming back down to those sort of marks? I don't know. I'd say Donald is going the right way. I think County Hurdle would be... I'd be doing what Donald is doing, yeah, definitely.
Fair enough. Right, OK, let's move on to Thurles. We had a great card yesterday. It was abandoned initially and rescheduled to yesterday. And we've got a number of viewers who got in touch. Thank you so much for your tweets. The first is from Nick Bembridge at Bembridge 77, the 77th of the Bembridges. And he says, looking forward to Ruby's told you so's regarding Alaho's Ryanair claims. Spot on and looks ready for the Ryanair. Hashtag move over Min. And Andrew Kennedy, Andrew K, and well, he's the 64 millionth of the Kennedys. Doubt on that performance that Alaho will be winning at the festival, to be honest. I don't think last season's RSA form is anything to write home about. So Andrew and Nick very much divided as to how impressed they were with Alaho. How impressed were you?
I was impressed. I think Thurles would be as fast a track as he would want at the trip. I think Cheltenham going a little bit further, maybe half a furlong, I think it is, would suit him better, stiffer track. But I tipped him kind of each way, 8, 10 to 1. I think that's good value now. Do I think he'll beat Min? No, I don't think he's as fast a horse or a better horse than Min. I just thought that was value. It was a really good performance. And I loved the way he picked up again, Lydia, from the last home. Alco de Flow took him on all the way, and it went a really good gallop, himself and Alaho and Battle Over Dayun sat up behind him. Whereas the others were way off them early in the race. Mm. And then when Balco de Faux paid the price and Battle Over Dayun paid the price, Alaho was left in isolation. Now, he was a bit sticky at the second last. It was probably the first fence and the second last were his two worst jumps. And he was very good again at the last. But you'd love to have to run in such early fractions that he was able to pick up again from the last and draw away to win. Willie has said he might go straight to the Ryanair. But I think 2.5 would really suit him. But Min et al. Are a different ballgame.
They certainly are. And we've had a tweet from a certain at Nick Luck. Have you heard of him? I've always thought Alaho was a nice horse, but he has about a stone to find with Min, doesn't he?
I'd say he probably does. And he does, but look, Min will run next weekend. Well, not this weekend, next weekend at the Dublin Racing Festival. And he'll be heading back. I do think Min, are they joint favourites that I read somewhere this morning? Couldn't be right, could it?
5-1 joints, yeah.
Can I stick up two horses in the one race?
You can do whatever you like.
I think Min at 5-1 is incredible value. I think I was tipping Alaho each way and taking Min to win.
So far, you've put up two bets and they're both in the same race.
I asked you, could I do it? You told me I could.
I said you could do what you like. It's entirely up to you.
Adam always now out to fives. Yeah, I think that's about him.
Thomas Kennedy.
Sorry. Mean is now out to fives. It's a wonderful price about Mean.
At Thomas Kennedy 93 says, can you ask Ruby tonight, if the Ryanair was tomorrow, who would he ride, Alaho or Min?
Min.
And how would you ride him, is my supplementary question.
Well, Alaho when you ran yesterday, so Min would be a good bit fresher today. He wouldn't have had the exertions of yesterday's race to overcome. How would I ride Min? Fall over, same way he was ridden last year.
And how would you ride Alaho if you won him?
Same thing, just wouldn't make him go any faster than he's able.
And do you think Min would make him go faster than he's able?
Possibly could. Yes, he could. Min's a faster horse than Alaho.
Okay, so that is Alaho and a second bet from Ruby as well, both in the Ryanair.
I'm looking forward to Thursday.
All eggs in one basket. right, same day, the preceding race, Cole Reavy, the novice mare, the mare novice chaser, trained by Willie Wellens, was very, very impressive, I thought, in the opener.
She was very impressive in the opener, and it was a task that was made a bit easier by, not made any easier, but the only challenger really at the second last was Scarlet and Dove. She tipped up, and that left Cole Reavy to come home in splendid isolation. But I think the best way we could do this, Lydia, is to try maybe and show Ellie May off Cole Reavy and try and get some sort of guide on what performance was what. Obviously, Ellie May was second to Alaho. So if you pick them both up at the start, May was second to Alaho. So if you pick them both up at the start in Thurles, Cole Reavy in the navy colours, you can't really see the white polka dot or whatever that's really called, bird's eye, and the white cap. And obviously, Ellie May's and JP McManus's colours. But they both start, obviously, the same time. Alaho and Balco de Flow, Battle of Dayoon, charge off in front. By the time they climb up the hill in Thurles and round the bend to the fifth fence, Alaho's well clear, but Ellie May jumps it. She is now a good bit in front of Cole Reavy, who has dropped completely off the pace. When we come down the hill in Thurles, back around by the stands to what was their first fence on the second circuit now, which is fence number 7, Ellie May is starting to go after Alaho a bit, which means she's gotten even further in front of Cole Reavy. Climbed the hill past fences 8 and 9, around to 10, and the race in front has slowed down. Balco de Flow has dropped off Alaho, so Ellie May is catching up. But Cole Reavy's now starting to pick up as well, and she's made a bit of ground on Ellie May at fence 10. Second last fence, or the last is fence 12. If you watch them crossing the road, Ellie May and Alaho cross it, Cole Reavy's well behind. Over the last, she's still a good bit behind, and Ellie May ends up a good bit in front of Cole Reavy. So what did we learn about Cole Reavy and Ellie May yesterday? Cole Reavy is joint favourite on runner no bet for the mare, Miss Paddy Power Chase. Ellie May is 5-1. And my third bet is Ellie May.
Yeah, I can each see that.
I correct myself. I got advised this morning by your good self that she was 9-2 non-runner no bet, 5-1 straight. So non-runner no bet at 9-2. Each way, Ellie May, I think, is rock solid.
That's a preference thing, I think, isn't it? I mean, for me, half a point, I'd rather have the comfort of non-runner no bet than, you know, get the fives. Other people would rather have the fives because Ellie May, that is the target, presumably, isn't it?
It is the target, but she might run again an ace in the Opera Hat Chase, and she have to do all her training between now and the Cheltenham Festival. So for half a point, knowing what can go wrong with horses, I will be taking the half a point shorter.
Okay. So Jamie Craven, I hope you were saying that could we possibly compare and contrast Cole Reavy and Ellie May? Job done. And Alan Simpkins has tweeted to say, have I just witnessed the inaugural Mayor's Chase winner and Ryanair winner in the last hour at Thurles? So I'm assuming he's thinking it might have. I don't know. Is he talking about Ellie May and Alaho, or is he talking about Cole Reavy and Alaho?
I'd say Cole Reavy and Alaho the way that was tweeted, but maybe you can send us on the message and correct us. But I'd say you saw them both in the one race.
Is that you give me some work again? Alan, if you could just get in touch with my PA, she can clarify what it is that you mean. You were saying that Colreevy, you said before that you expected Colreevy to head to the Grade 2 at Limerick around the time of the Cheltenham Festival, and that seems to be the plan. Willie said it's open to question now.
It's open to question. Willie did say it yesterday that he's, in most years, Lydia, it's the day after the Cheltenham Festival, but Cheltenham being at its latest week in March this year, Limerick is actually the Sunday before, but it's a Grade 2 chase. She's only a novice. It's there for the take. Well, it'd be the very same horses again, so you would imagine it would be there for the taking for her.
Okay, well, that was a longer than usual opening section, but so much of significance had happened in the past few days, we thought that it merited it. Now, this is an interesting section, and it's been prompted by a really excellent question that we received from Leon Aldridge. And so we're going to answer it, or Ruby's going to answer it, quite extensively. First of all, take it away, Liam.
Hi Lydia. When Ruby seemed to be on every other favourite at the festival, dictating the tactics from the front, was he not surprised with the jockeys didn't try to disrupt his tactics more? The reason I ask is, if it was on the other foot, I don't think Ruby would have allowed the best horse and jockey to dictate the pace, as he talks so openly about the tactical steps he would take to make the race go his way.
So Ruby, Liam's question, which I think you'll agree, is excellent, isn't it?
It's a good question, yeah. It is a good question.
He is focusing, first of all, on Faheen. And essentially he's asking, if a jockey and a trainer have the best horse, is there any way that others can disrupt that perceived dominance? And he's mentioned Faheen, who, of course, you rode to win the 2015 champion hurdle. And he also ran in the race 3 years later when he finished sixth. What can you, in light of what Liam's asked, can you talk through those two races?
I can. Look, in the first year in 2015, there was only eight runners. And it was quite obvious from a long way out in that champion hurdle that there was no front runner. And he had won his previous start. Willie Mullins was contemplating running him in the Red Mills hurdle because he thought he might need to have a run being dropped in for in preparation for Cheltenham. And I remember having the conversation with him about, Willie, there's no pace in the champion hurdle. He'd be making the run. So it looked that obvious and that far out. Now, I went quite steady on him in that champion hurdle. There was only eight runners, and I got to float around in front and quicken the race up as I saw fit. Jumped the fourth last, went a little bit faster, down the hill to the third last, quickened it up, second last, jumped it well, and set sail off the bend, and he put the race to bed. But he was he was a very fast horse then as well. He won a Christmas hurdle at Kempton, so there was no doubt about speed for him. But that didn't happen that often in Cheltenham, whereby you got to dictate a race all the way. Now, I only ever rode six winners there that made all, I think.
Is that all?
That's all. That actually made all. Now, different horses went to the front early in races after jumping three or four, and other horses I came late on, because pace, to me, is a much bigger factor than actual position. Where being the first three, well, being the first three is fine once they're not going really fast. But they're going too fast, you don't want to be in the first three. So pace is a bigger thing. But I think that misconception that you get to control races from the front and you're being allowed to saunter around, I think that's a little bit far-fetched or imaginative. And I think Annie Powers' champion hurdle shows that best. And if we play Annie Powers' champion hurdle, if you look at the start, the new one, so it's on a couple of years. He didn't want to make it against Faheen, but he's gotten a bit older and now he wants to be ridden with a bit more stamina. He jumps out. Nicholas Canyon was a front runner. He bucks out and so does Annie Power. Now, it was Annie Power who ended up going the fastest and therefore got on the front. I didn't slow her down because I wanted a relentless gallop. Now, Barry Geraghty was very aware of that on my 10 to yours, who was a hold-up horse, and he moves on to the tail of the first three or four horses. But if you look at Identity Thief as they jumped at second hurdle in the champion hurdle, who was a grade 1 minute 2 miler, he's flat to the boards. And you look at all the horses behind Identity Thief backwards, they can't go any faster. So the cream rises at the top very quickly. Annie Power is making it. When you jump the third hurdle, Nicholas Canyon makes a mistake. And Barry Geraghty slots into second because he was the only horse that could travel at the pace Annie Power was going. She keeps galloping up the hill, back down the hill, two out, three out, two out, and she lengthens away to win. That wasn't controlling it. That was just end-to-end, really strong gallop. Now, the second part of the question was taking on Faheen. Faheen lines up 3 years older. Mm. He hasn't gotten any quicker. And Charlie Parks books out to go with him. To me, when I got off Faheen this day, Charlie Parks jumps out, takes him on. But Charlie Parks ends up going away from Faheen. I couldn't go any faster and keep up with Charlie Parks. He and Charlie Parks ended up pulling up, but I let him off. And when I eventually passed him again at the top of the hill, down the hill of Faheen, that gear that Faheen had had 3 years earlier wasn't there. He subsequently went up in trip and ended up winning in Punchestown over 3 miles, ended up going up in trip over fences, was third in a juicing. So I don't think that setting out to try and beat someone else is the way forward. And I think when you overthink tactics, and I've been guilty of this as much as anybody else, and when you overthink it and get it wrong, it reminds you to stop doing it. So it happened to me on Mean in the Champion Chase.
Now, can I stop you there? This is the race that you're not at all bothered about me calling your ride on Min negative. Can I just check that? This is that race, yeah?
It was negative. You're right. But I had to try something different. But it didn't work. I overthought it. So I set out on Min to follow Altior, having led him in the Supreme and led him, and he'd been led Min in a Champion Chase. I went about doing it the other way around. Let Altior lead me and see if we can change the result. But it didn't, because all it did was negate Min's strongest points, which were galloping and jumping, and he ultimately ended up running disappointingly. So I overthought it on Min. It backfires. But I also did it in the Champion Hurdle on Hurricane Fly. Somebody lined up at the start and he comes out onto the track. You saw Min jumping the first two fences. Altior is a clear lead. I've made it balls, but already game over. But I did it on Hurricane Fly. So you go out on the track in Hurricane Fly in the Champion Hurdle. Rock on Ruby is 2012. To me, my biggest danger was probably Binocular, who's lined up behind me. Hurricane Fly had been quite keen the year before, and I set about settling Hurricane Fly. Now, down over the first hurdle, he's a bit keen. I get him switched off behind Zaidpur. But when we get to the second hurdle, I've switched off. We haven't gone that quick. I'm going to climb up the hill and round the bend, overturn and Rock on Ruby, start to roll away. And after going a half a mile, happy that what I thought was my biggest danger was behind me, and after getting my horse settled, I now realise the two in front are going to me. You've overthought it again. So you can't overthink things. So you're on about going out to try and disrupt the opposition. Actually, if you just go out and ride your own horse and ride the pace of the race, it's far more fruitful than going out thinking about the opposition and thinking about position. It's about pace and about jumping out, going, and then finding your position, rather than sitting back off it and expecting pace to be whatever it could be or might be or mightn't be. If you line up and jump, you'll find the pace and then you'll find your position.
Yeah, it's knowing what your horse is and then adapting to the circumstances of the race.
Exactly. But you have to line up and jump off to adapt to those situations. It might take you two strides to adapt. You could line up in the Fred Winter, and before you get to the first hurdle, it's only 100 yards away, you could be stone last because these are flying. Or you could line up in a county hurdle thinking, I'm going to take my time here. There's so much pace. Line up and jump off. But by the time you get to the first hurdle, you're fifth because they haven't gone quick. And you find your position in the race that way, rather than going out with a set in your head that this is what's going to happen and I'm going to do this, because often that's not what happens.
Liam has also referenced in his question, he's referenced some things that you've said during the course of this series, which sort of indicate that there are certain things that you do in a race that will allow you to disadvantage or disrupt a rival. Is that just something that can only come to you spontaneously and it's about the knowledge of the horses?
It is. And when you see it happening in front of you, like, there's no way you would get on the outside of Asturian for launch.
Yeah.
You just get on his inside, where he jumps right. You know he's going to get on his inside and don't be going up on his outside to keep him straight. And likewise, you might move up to a doubtful stare. You'd be looking, what's in front of me? What's going well? Will that stay? So you move up onto its boot to push it forward. But that's only as the race develops. You can't go out thinking, right, I'm going to. You spend the whole race looking for that horse who mightn't even be in the bloody race. Yeah. So you can only adapt to those things as it happens to you. But that's watching replays, knowing form, knowing colours, knowing jockeys, knowing what's going on around you. You have to be aware of all those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Ruby, thank you very much. And Liam, I hope you feel that he has answered your question fully. I certainly think he has. Well, you know how it works. This time of year, every week, we have a fresh batch of horses that have been entered at the Cheltenham Festival. And this week, Ruby, it is the novice hurdlers. So that's for the Sky Bet Supreme, the Ballymore, the Albert Barlett and the Triumph. The Dawn Run hasn't yet closed, or open closed, however you want to put it.
Closed.
Closed. Okay, I shall use closed in future. I'm going to start with the Ballymore. I just want to, the reason being that I'd like to talk about Gally Hill, who ran at Newbury last week. What did you make of his performance?
It was a good performance, Lydia. Obviously, he was in the murky gloom in Newbury, and it was quite hard to see it. It was his first run on the track, and it was, I thought it was a good enough performance. Calgary Tiger jumped out and went a really good gallop in front. And he got to go to the third hurdle before you get a kind of a clear enough view of Gally Hill. And he jumps the third and the fourth in similar fashion, a bit more like a chaser than a hurdler, but he is coming from the point-to-point field. And when you swing it on down to the last hurdle where he makes his only mistake, and Robin's Dream is coming to challenge, Robin's Dream gets the upper hand. Gally Hill really battles back and wins decisively at the death. And the third horse has substantial form. And I think Richard Hoyle's commentary, he was really taken with the gallop that Calgary Tiger was going, and the impression it created on him. He was there watching it live, and I think that's what we have to go on.
And also, Nicky Henderson spoke to Nick Luck on Nick Luck Daily's podcast earlier this week, and Nick happened to phone him at the time when Nicky was actually doing his Cheltenham Festival Novice Hurdle entries, and he asked him, you know, which horse would you particularly mention? Gally Hill was the first one that he mentioned.
Yeah, was he just at G on his list of entries, or was he the one to go from? You could have rang Willie Mullins at the same time, and God knows what you would have got.
I'll come on to him in a moment. But I thought that was interesting, and Nicky was saying that he felt that he wasn't particularly, that his novice hurdles wasn't necessarily his best department this season. He feels like, for example, he's very strong in novice chasers, maybe less so for novice hurdlers, but he definitely pushed Gally Hill forward, and he also pushed forward Flinter Sacra for the Supreme. That horse has got to learn to settle.
He has, but as we've said numerous occasions, I think an empty Cheltenham will definitely help horses like that.
I know you like Bear Gills for this. I also like Brave Man's Game for the Ballymore at Cheltenham in March. And they don't have any other options. They are only entered in the Ballymore, which is the kind of, you know, certainty, lack of ambiguity that punters like.
Yeah, and two different horses. Obviously, Brave Man's Game is a really good jumper. We saw him in the Challow when he jumped really well and galloped on strongly to win. Whereas Bear Gills in Exeter, we saw him kicking the first hurdle out of the ground. He got back around there to the third last and made a similar mistake and didn't show much respect for the last. But he just looked a big imposing horse on the television who looks like he's a big engine and he knows how to win. He's definitely going the right direction.
We will learn more about this division at Cheltenham this Saturday, provided it passes the inspection tomorrow. I should also mention that the juveniles, Duffelcoat and St. Sam, trained by Willie Mullins, are also entered the Ballymore. And Duffelcoat is in the Albert Bartlett 3 miles. I've looked through and I can't find a record of a four-year-old having run in that race before.
No, I can't think of a four-year-old winner at the Ballymore. Maybe there was, but not that I rode against. But look, maybe we're all missing a trick. Maybe they should be going further. You think nothing to run them over 2 miles and five in Goodwood on the flat, four-year-old. So maybe that's what they should be doing.
He seems like the antithesis of, you know, just a juvenile straight. It seems like the antithesis that what you would want for the Albert Bartlett at the festival. I don't doubt that Duffelcoat in himself is ultimately a thorough stayer.
And without insulting Duffelcoat, if he really wants 3 miles now as a four-year-old, what sort of distance is he going to want?
We've also got the River Don at Doncaster this Saturday. Actually, we've already mentioned it earlier in the series. This is often quite a significant pointer to the 3 mile novice hurdlers. Flash Collonge was entered in it. He's not actually entered in the Albert Bartlett, which I think is probably the right call for that horse. I don't think he's quite grizzled enough for the Albert Bartlett. But moving on to the Supreme, we've got a couple of mares running at Fairy House on Saturday, well, several mares running at Fairy House on Saturday, one of which is entered in the Supreme. Is it likely that Galwals will end up in the Supreme rather than the Dawn?
I couldn't see it, Lydia. I'd imagine she would be heading for the Dawn run. She jumped the second last and Thorless and sprinted down the hill to win. But I'd say if we're looking at Fairy House and looking for a Supreme horse from Willie's Yard, it's more like the MC Muldoon or Micromanage. They're both in the maiden hurdles there. Micromanage was a high-class flat horse. MC Muldoon was in Luca Kamani's. They both got beaten at Leopardstown over Christmas, but both looked to have improved. And if they're going to be Supreme horses, they really need to be winning maiden hurdles.
Can we talk about Willie Miller's entries then? 31 in the Supreme. Now, I've added these up, so these might be wrong, but they're near the number. So 31 in the Supreme, 30 in the Ballymore, 12 in the Albert Bartlett, and 8 in the Triumph. Wow, those are numbers.
Yeah, they didn't start doing the entries until 11:45, so they ran out of time to get any more into the Albert Bartlett and the Shrive. They only ended up at 12-8. No, I think as Willie says, if you're not in, you most certainly can't win, and we can always take them out.
Does that suggest that Willie is casting around in the Supreme and the Ballymore for what his key horses are if he's entered 31 and 30?
No, definitely not. We even when he had Batour, Duvan, Fahim, etc., whatever the best novice hurdlers he had, he would still have had quite a similar number of entries in all those races. He puts every horse in, and as the time comes closer, he starts taking them out.
It looks like he's also being quite defiant about the little local difficulties of travel restrictions and the obstacles of Brexit and, you know, the COVID and all of that kind of thing. Because I was wondering whether Irish trainers would take a look at their strings, and whereas you were mentioning with Joe Cullen last week, you know, some might just sort of sneak it on their last minute to get over to Cheltenham. I thought that Irish trainers might be very much rationalising the numbers that they are thinking about bringing over.
They might have to, but that's not for a decision not for another 6.5 weeks. And in Willie Mullins' mind, that would be one that is far too far away to be making right now. So we'll put them all in, we'll carry on as normal, and we will worry about that in 6.5 weeks' time.
I'm liking the idea of Willie being a sort of 11th hour, last minute merchant. It appeals to the deadline merchant in me, that does. I like it. A slight concern I had, a little bit of a worry, was that I saw that Zana here, along with some other four-year-olds, including French Aseel and Tihupu, have an alternative in the Supreme. We wondered whether Zana here might get that alternative entry, and he has.
Yeah, but to me, it's an alternative entry. I wouldn't be reading too much into it. I think if Zana here goes and wins in Leopardstown next weekend, and appreciated wins as well, is Gordon Elliott going to decide, well, you know, I'd love to take him on, or I'll run in the Triumph, for I know I'm better than the rest of them already? I'd say it's a speculative entry.
Well, I hope you're all right, Ruby, and that Zana here is going to go to the Triumph, obviously. I should just mention some horses that aren't entered in the race. As Paul Nichols stated, Mon Miral isn't there. And also Thelem, who's quite a talented horse in France and had been towards the fore of some markets, that's not entered. And Dawn Rising, every year, Ruby, there is an Aidan O'Brien-trained horse that sort of sits at the front of the Triumph hurdle market, despite the fact that he's never been seen, or she has never been seen, on a racecourse jumping a hurdle. This year, it was Dawn Rising, and he's not entered. I should also mention that Make Good, sadly, he isn't going to be making the festival. And you said to us that Pure Genius, this was, you know, when we were discussing whether or not to include him in last week's show, you said there's absolutely no point because your dad wouldn't enter him at the festival.
27 rated horse in the Grade 1 novice hurdle would be against my father's religion.
Amen to that. Now, we've had a lot of comments from you, questions and points about the Paddy Power Stayers hurdle, and they're partly prompted by the performance at the weekend of Roxana Ruby, who dotted up in the Warfield, the mare's hurdle at Ascot.
She surely did. Travelled really well. Harry Skelton even rode her with loads of confidence, produced her on the bridle after the second last, and she beat Magical Light as she liked. And Dan has stated that the Stayers hurdle would be their preferred option. But she has to improve to win that. And that probably shows, how good Paisley Park and Tyne Hill are.
Yeah, OK. So they beat her comprehensively in the long walk at Ascot. Cheltenham is a different track, though. She's tried it before. She's run well second in the Relkeel last season. She's never tried 3 miles there. Can you see her narrowing the gap?
She might. She jumps well. She travels well. There's no doubt about her stamina. But no, I don't see why she does. I think the two geldings were good in Newbury. They were very good in the long walk. Yeah, Cheltenham is different, but I don't think it's that different. A lot of long walk winners win Stayers hurdles, and not much long walk form changes to the Stayers hurdle. I think, you know, so I fancy the two geldings that'd still be too good for her.
Lots of opinions from our viewers on this. John Brady mentions Lisnagar Oscar, last year's winner, has had a wind up two races this season and travelled very well in both to two out. I think he's probably overpriced because he won, you know, it was a very strongly run race. There was no fluke about the way in which he won last year.
No, and he actually had a better run than I realised in the Albert Bartlett the year before as well. So he is a horse who likes Cheltenham. And just to correct myself, he's had the wind up since those two runs this year.
Well, that's what John Braid is implying. And to be perfectly honest, fess up here, that's news to me.
It is news to me as well. And if he has It looks like John is suggesting he got to the second last and stopped and bought his runs this year, and he's had the wind up to try and correct that. If he has, if you know that information, John, and he has, you have an edge on the rest of us.
Not anymore. Ben Nolan has been in touch. He says, I can't believe Ronald Pump is still a nice price considering his run behind Honeysuckle, and providing he's fit and raring to go, he should run a cracker.
He is, but I think his run behind Sire de Burley prior to the Honeysuckle race shows he has a little bit to find with Sire de Burley. He is a cracking price. Matthew Smith's horses are in really good form. Yeah, he's definitely flies under the radar. I don't know why he missed his intended prep or his intended race at Christmas, but he did. He has a chance. He was placed last year behind Liz Nagar Oscar, but he hasn't shown us anything this year that says he's a better horse than he was last year.
Now, clearly a member of Richard Johnson's family has been in touch. Aidan Johnson says, Richard Johnson will keep hold of Time Hill to as late as possible. Hit the front too soon at Ascot. Ruby has always stated since last year's Albert Bartlett he was the horse to take out of the race.
Yeah, I think he did pull up a little bit when Richard sent him on in Ascot, but yeah. I think watching the race, he was sent on at the right time. He just could have done with company for longer. I think when you watch something back with hindsight, but at the time it looked like he was doing the right thing. So he's trying to do the right thing as often as you can, and more times he'd be right than wrong. So I still fancy him. I tipped him last year. I tipped him in the Isle of Bartlett, and I think he'll still be the horse that gives Paisley Park most to do, and I think he could turn the form with him. He will just want Paisley Park coming at him earlier and more, you know. He definitely idled in Ascot and got nabbed.
Talking of Paisley Park, he's in the Cleeve at Cheltenham this Saturday, provided Cheltenham pass their inspection tomorrow. What do you think of that target? I mean, he's done this before. It's quite, they've signaled right from the start that this was going to be the plan.
Yeah, and it suits him. He's improved from Newbury to Ascot. It's a trodden path for him. Why not go the same way again? He'd be very hard to beat. Doesn't look to be much pace in it. That might be the only thing. And for Gavin Sheehan to park behind him on itchy feet. We've seen Paisley Park quicken up in races, but in the Stall Your Own race in Newbury, he could never get to Time Hill away from the fourth last. Aidan Coleman starting to nudge him, but he never really gets any closer. Now, he obviously has improved fitness-wise for that run, but in a slowly tactical run race, what could happen? Whereas, if you look at Itchy Feet, he does have a turn of foot. He quickened up really well to win the Scilly Isles last year. His jumping has been suspect enough. That's probably a bit wrong. He makes mistakes. Now, he did burst a blood vessel in his last start, and that would be a concern. But maybe they're thinking it's the defences and the mistakes are making him burst the blood vessels, or they're coming back to hurdles with him. But if Gavin Sheehan can let Aidan Coleman in front of him and stay behind him for long enough, he's the one horse in the race that might have the turn of foot to come at him. It's only a might. I don't think Itchy Feet is Paisley Park, but he could get lucky and mug him.
Well, it's a new rival trying 3 miles for the first time. Itchy Feet up against Paisley Park. Time now to look ahead to a couple of key contests from the weekend. And the Nicky Henderson team here, Ruby, is pivotal. And there's a very, very interesting development. Santini, about whom there was a doubt about whether he would be declared for the Cotswold Chase, he has been declared with Aidan Coleman on board. Nico de Boinville's going up to Doncaster to ride Shishkin.
He is, and hardly surprising, but I suppose it adds to the speculation as to who will ride Santini, who might ride Champ, what would Nico de Bonville do? Exactly the kind of conversation that used to drive me nuts when I was riding. Please stop having those conversations and trying to get me off horses. I want to keep the rides on them all. So I can imagine Nico de Bonville is about to turn off right now if he is watching. He's probably not watching anyway. But look, Aidan Coleman takes over. Nico can't be in two places at once. But it will be interesting to see if Nico rides Champ.
So, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Is he going to he's going to the meeting that's more likely to be on to ride the younger, more long-term horse?
Yeah, I'd say, and even I'd say from Nicky's point of view, he would probably want Nico on Shishkin being the novice. Santini has plenty of experience. Jerry McGrath rode him in Aintree. Nico rode him in the King George. Aidan Coleman's going to have a go on Saturday. So, yeah, I could see Nicky's point in, even if Nico didn't want to go to Doncaster, in wanting Nico to go there. It's more likely to be on, and Shishkin being a novice, I could see Nicky wanting him on him.
Okay, let's deal with Shishkin first before returning to the subject of Santini and also the implications of Champ. He's up against East Ilick and Fastbuck, Eldorado, Allen, and Cheddleton. Cheddleton, in particular, was a good winner at Haydock.
He was a good winner at Haydock. Fastbuck probably has to improve a bit. Eldorado Allen won when he beat Gunball, when Gunball fell. Disappointed then in the Henry VIII. To be honest with you, Lydia, if Shishkin is what I believe him to be, and I think what you believe him to be, he'll beat the three of those.
Yeah, I think it's going to be it's a perfect contest as well to take you to Cheltenham in terms of the timing. Nonetheless, I think there's some good horses in behind who themselves can win some good races in future, just not the Arkle.
No, they're just running into a fair one.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the Paddy Power 45 sleeps to Cheltenham. Are we five Cotswolds chase? Santini, Aidan Coleman on board for the first time. Now, Santini is not the easiest, is he?
No, he'll earn his riding fee. He's going to be riding two horses that will be off the bridle for a long way on Saturday. Paisley Park could be off it early enough in the Cleeve. And prior to that, he's going to be pushing and shoving Santini for quite a bit. But it's probably a more realistic target. He won the race last year, Santini. It's definitely a more realistic target for him than the King George ever was. Maybe they're running the King George and they're sharpening him up a little bit and will make him an easier ride for Aidan. It is an interesting race, though. Plenty of pace in there. Plenty of horses like to get on with it. And I think the makeup of this race might even suit St. Calvados a bit better. It looked like he didn't get home in the King George, but with the way he pulled, he was never going to get home. I think it'd be an easier race for Gavin Sheehan to drop St. Calvados right out in and just creep away on him rather than at Kempton, always being aware of the fact that it's hard to be too far back.
Okay, so how do you see the tactics panning out here? We've got Bristol DeMay in the race. We've got Lakeview Lad as well, who's already lowered Santini and Native Rivers Colours at Aintree this season.
Yeah, well, I can't see Lakeview Lad forcing it. He'd be just behind the pace. But Bristol DeMay does like to get on with things. Santini would be up there. I think there's plenty of pace. I know it'll be really soft ground. That's if it passes the inspection tomorrow afternoon, even. But it'll be testing. But I think when it's that wet, it's nearly better. Be looser.
Yeah, I get that. And Native River is another one who should be up there as well, as long as, you know, he's still able to.
Barney stands at the start. He'll be up there as well. They'll all be up there. The two big ones, Bristol DeMay and Native River, they both like to get on with it and they will probably help each other. They'll drag Santini, and if St. Calvados is going to stay, he should be coming from well off the pace at horses who'll have done a lot of running by the time he gets to them.
Most of these horses have got a lot of Cheltenham form, haven't they? I mean, even Lakeview Lad's got a really good run when third in the Ultima. The Conditional has won the Ultima. Your Kill, of course, you've ridden to win the JLT.
And the way he's ridden in the rehearsal, Lydia, it'd be likely that he'll be bounced out up there on the inside as well. Now, I would imagine they will be railed plenty far out on the track on Saturday. And that will give Your Kill plenty of scope to jump into. But I'd imagine he'd be easy enough getting back on track. But he'd be up there as well. That could be a real slog and could suit someone coming from a long way off the pace.
And how about Yala Enki, striking while the iron's hot?
Very hot. I thought Taunton might come too soon from after having such a hard race in the Welsh National. But he bounced out of that within 14 days. And now we're going back again in 7 days. That's 3 miles and five, 3 miles in Taunton to face back into this. He's a concrete horse if he does it.
So back to St. Calvados. Even though you've just described how strongly run you sort of envisaging this race is going to be, you think his stamina will last out for that?
He loves really soft ground. I think if you can just switch him off, he ran with the choke out for a full circuit and a bit in the King George. And I think that's impossible at that level, at that grade of race, over that distance to do that. And I just think if Gavin parks him, he could.
Mm-hmm. Let's end this section as we started it then with the implications for Champ. We've talked to the reasons why Nico de Boinville might be going to Doncaster, very good reasons to ride Shishkin. But your immediate reaction was that has implications for who's riding whom in the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Nicky Henderson has Santini. He also has Champ. We haven't seen Champ so far this season. He seems to be a definite for the Denman chase at Newbury next month, having had a substantial away day, Nicky Henderson called it.
Yeah, well, look, Terry McGrath obviously unfortunately injured. He had a bad fall in Lingfield and he did ride him in Aintree earlier in the season. But I think giving Aidan Coleman a go on him who doesn't look to have a Gold Cup ride is a big pointer. They're definitely letting Nico get acquainted with him or let Aidan get acquainted with him. Now, I would still imagine Nico, a stable jockey, will have the option. And he has done a lot of schooling on Champ in the past, or so we heard last year. As a novice chaser, Nico did all the schooling on him. So it looks like they're going to give Nico a go, and Nicky is covering the bases by letting Aidan Coleman have a go on Santini.
So, some interesting races on Saturday and intriguing subtext as well. So come to the end of another show, but I have one final tweet for you, Ruby. It's quite an important one. It's from Todd, at Todd 10068, and he says, "Hello, Lydia. Would it be possible on Road to Cheltenham for Ruby to give a quick get well message to Phil Hill, who's in ICU at Pinderfields Hospital? He's a big racing fan, a big Ruby fan, and it will really lift his spirits with his fight against COVID."
Most certainly will. Phil, you are not on your own at the moment, be it in the UK or in Ireland. And I wish you all the best. I'm sure all the staff in the hospital are doing their best for you. Keep fighting, Phil.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. And we wish everyone who is struggling with or has struggled with this virus, take good care of yourselves. Goodbye from Ruby and me. Mm-hmm.